Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Love came to my door, a sleeping roar, and a madman's soul. He thought for sure I'd seen it dancing up a river.
Joni Mitchell, Jazz Style. This is Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer. Back in the 60s, Joni Mitchell and Herbie Hancock were in different worlds. He was playing with the Miles Davis Quintet. She was singing in folk circles. Now that he's one of the most influential pianists in jazz and she's one of America's most famous songwriters, they find they have a lot in common. Today, the same day that Joni is releasing her first album of new songs in 9 years, Herbie Hancock is presenting his own view of her music. His album is called River, The Joni Letters, and it features vocals from stars like this one, Nora Jones. I'm pleased to welcome Herbie Hancock back to Soundcheck. Herbie, good to have you here.
It's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Did you intend it this way, that Joni's album and your album of her songs would come out on the same day?
No.
That's a happy coincidence. What led you to do this album of Joni Mitchell songs?
Actually, it was a suggestion from the head of A&R for Verve Records, a woman named Dahlia Ambach. When she and I were discussing what I might do for my next record for Verve, because I'm signed to Verve, she said, you know, I know you're a really good friend of Joni's and you have, you know, deep respect for her and her work, but her as a human being, would you consider doing the music of Joni Mitchell? And I thought about it for a second. I thought, wow, what a great idea.
Mm. Now, there was this Nonesuch put out a Joni Mitchell tribute album not too long ago, but yours is, it's very different. Would you say this is a tribute album, or is this kind of something else?
The word tribute album gets thrown around a lot about my album, River. I have never thought of it as a tribute. I suppose it is a tribute album in a way, in a manner of speaking, but I never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
To me, I'm doing my view, in a manner of speaking, or my take on the music of an incredible poet and songwriter, mm-hmm. you know, who I admire for various reasons. I mean, she's a Renaissance person, you know, but she's somebody I know. It's
right,
not like
right.
usually you think a tribute is to someone. Maybe you don't have a personal connection to them,
like Johnny Mercer or someone from
the Great American Songbook.
Yeah,
yeah. I did a record called Gershwin's World.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it wasn't a tribute to George Gershwin himself because it's called Gershwin's World and it's songs by other people, but he's like the central figure. But this isn't like that. I mean, I know Joni. I've known her for since 1979.
She put out an album called Mingus, one of my favorite Joni Mitchell records, but a really underrated record.
That's when I met her.
That's when you met her.
Yeah.
Okay. Which, you know, was like a real sort of evidence, the first sort of real oral evidence that we had of how much she knew and loved jazz, not just Mingus, but, you know, with the little clips of Mingus talking about how he was going to outlive the Duke and all that kind of stuff woven in. So were you a fan of hers at that point?
No, I didn't even know very much about her. I mean, I knew she was a big popular singer that made hit records. I knew that she was well respected, you know, for her words. But mm-hmm. I really never paid that much attention to her, you know. And so I was curious more than anything about, you know, Joni Mitchell doing a record about Charlie Mingus?
Yeah.
What is that about? You know, and then when I found out that Wayne Shorter also was on it, it was actually Jaco Pastorius that called me and asked me to
the late bass player.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right, to be on the record. And when I found out that those guys were doing it, I said, well, let me get over there and see what's going on, because something must be going on.
Yeah.
You know, and then when I arrived at this rehearsal space, I don't actually remember where it was. Somewhere in L.A., but I didn't know what kind of approach Joni might want. Because I'm thinking, now, here's someone that's a kind of pop, kind of folk singer, mm-hmm. you know, and Jaco, I knew him from Weather Report, and Wayne, I've known him since the Miles Davis days and Weather Report. And here are guys that explore a lot of different territory. And I wanted to know, you know, how to what degree did she want some kind of freer expression than what you normally find in a rock setting.
Right.
And because I figured if they're going to have those guys, she wants some degree of freedom.
Right.
You know, and Jaco said, no, you don't have to edit anything. She wants it loose, you know,
and this
the
was
way
your,
you play.
This was your introduction to Joni Mitchell.
Right.
And you guys became friends, and here you are now almost 30 years later releasing albums of her material on the same day. We're speaking with the pianist Herbie Hancock. A couple of times already, you've mentioned the lyrics, the words, mm-hmm. and actually you refer to her as a poet.
Right.
In all of the different sort of versions and reinventions of Joni Mitchell on your record, mm-hmm. the one that really stands out for the words, I think, is the Leonard Cohen performance, mm-hmm. where you get one poet to kind of, you know, review the words of another.
Right.
Is that why you chose him, and is that why the delivery is this kind of spoken delivery as opposed to conventional singing?
Well, the reason he's on the record is because Joni has been influenced by Leonard Cohen. They're both from Canada,
right?
And she was quite familiar with his work, and she has a deep respect for Leonard. And so we were so happy when Leonard agreed to be on the record. And it was Larry Klein's idea. Larry Klein is the primary producer of River.
And he was her wife.
Yeah.
That would have been a good trick.
Right.
Her husband and longtime colleague, creative partner, too.
Right. And he's a great bass player and producer.
Mm-hmm.
And Larry suggested one day. When we decided that we made our wish list of who we'd like to appear on the record, and Leonard's name was on it because it made sense, because he's part of Joni's history. And it was later on that Larry came up with this idea of Leonard doing more a spoken word thing, because we wanted some special ways of doing Joni's material. So when he came up with that, And it was also his idea that it be accompanied by me playing solo acoustic piano as in a kind of cinematic way, like soundtrack underneath the words.
Well, let's actually hear a little bit of it. The track is The Jungle Line with Leonard Cohen and my guest Herbie Hancock.
Rousseau walks on trumpet paths, safaris to the heart of all that jazz. Through eye bars and girders, through wires and pipes, the mathematic circuits of the modern nights. Through huts, through Harlem, through jails and gospel pews, through the class on Park and the trash on Vine, through Europe and the deep, deep heart of Dixie Blue, through savage progress cuts the jungle line. Rousseau paints a jungle flower behind her ear.
The Jungle Line, a song by Joni Mitchell in a performance by Leonard Cohen and my guest, the pianist Herbie Hancock. This is from Herbie's latest release, River. The Joni Letters, out today on Verve Records. And Herbie, it features also the voice of Nora Jones, whom we heard earlier, Tina Turner,
right,
Corinne Bailey Rae, Luciana Sosa, who has her own new record out, which also features Joni Mitchell's song on it, and Joni Mitchell herself. Now, she can be somewhat reclusive. so, you know, how did you convince her to be a part of this project?
I beat her up and tied her up. I said, you will do this. No, no.
Did she pick the song, the Tea Leaf Prophecy?
No, actually Larry did. Larry pretty much picked most of the songs. I had to depend on him because I don't know songs. I don't really know them, you know, and he knows a lot more about Joni's songs and her lyrics and the meaning of them. And anyway, that was a suggestion from him for Tea Leaf Prophecy, because Joni, it's kind of biographical. It's about her mother and how her mother and her father met. Mm-hmm. And about her mother going to a fortune teller that told her she was going to be married in a month, and the mother thought that the fortune teller was crazy. How is that going to be possible? This is up in Saskatoon, Canada, right? Uh-huh. And during the Second World War, and all the young men were off to war. So, how am I going to get married in a month? To what? and oddly enough, in a month, she got married to a young man, a young soldier. And about a year later, Joni was born.
Hence the subtitle of the song, Lay Down Your Arms, a soldier come back from war. Here's the original Joni Mitchell song, The Tea Leaf Prophecy. Joni Mitchell from her own recording, The Tea Leaf Prophecy, but there is a new version of this on Herbie Hancock's new record, River, The Joni Letters, that features Joni Mitchell. And I guess, Herbie, as we can hear in the background, a vastly different interpretation here. What changed? Does this have something to do with her mother passing away? I mean, you mentioned how this was basically a biographical song.
Yeah, her mother passed away this past January. And we thought it might be appropriate to suggest that she do this song, which she wanted to do.
Again, it's The Tea Leaf Prophecy. Joni Mitchell with Herbie Hancock.
Boys and babies talking to teacher in the treble clef. She plants her garden in the spring. Tokyo Rose is talking on the radio. She says I'm leaving here, but she don't go. Out of the blue, just passing through, a young flight sergeant on 2 weeks later says, Merle McKee, no one else will do. And he seals the Tea Leaf Prophecy.
The Tea Leaf Prophecy, the new version from Joni Mitchell on Herbie Hancock's record, River, The Joni Letters. That's Joni Mitchell herself making a cameo appearance on the record. Man, what a lineup. Joni Mitchell, you, Herbie Hancock, Wayne Shorter playing sax is getting major props from the critics, as he should.
Yeah.
Got to mention Dave Holland on bass.
Oh, it sounds so beautiful.
Just a terrific, terrific band that you've put together here.
And Vinnie Colaiuta.
On the drums.
On drums. I mean, the textures of his cymbal work and all of the little just ornaments that he plays are just so appropriate. Now, and Lionel Luecke.
Who's not on all of the songs.
He's not on all the songs, but he's on most of them.
Mm-hmm. Guitarist.
He's a new guitarist on the scene. He's from Benin, Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And we hardly told him anything about what to play. But his instincts are so incredible. He just knew exactly what to contribute.
Are you finding that, you know, in the modern world that you can go to a country like Benin and find young kids who you don't have to tell everything to, that they've been able to just kind of soak in, you know, pop or funk or jazz or whatever the style happens to be?
In this case, I didn't find him. He found me. He actually applied for the student jazz program of the Thelonious Monk Institute of Jazz. And I happen to be the chairman of that organization. And that's when I first heard Lionel. He applied for that. We selected him. And based off of what he sent in, what he submitted, that the CD he submitted of him playing, I just, it knocked me out. It knocked everybody out. Wayne Shorter heard him too. Wayne was one of the
judges, selectors.
You know. And,
well, so yeah. Now Wayne is also represented on this album as a composer. I mean, it's mostly Joni Mitchell songs, but there are two exceptions. There's Solitude by Duke Ellington, mm-hmm. and one of Wayne's best-known pieces, Nefertiti. What were you trying to make some connection between Wayne and Joni by putting this on the album?
Well, there is a connection. That's why these two pieces that she didn't write are on there. I found out from Larry Klein that Joni was very much influenced by the recording that we made of Nefertiti during our tenure with Miles Davis's band mm-hmm. back in the 60s. And she really loves that composition. And she loves Wayne. She loves Wayne the way he plays anyway, you know. And when we started thinking about who should be in the band, Wayne's name was a no-brainer. You know, to pick him. You know.
Well, let's hear a little bit of Nefertiti. It's a Wayne Shorter composition from Herbie Mann's new record, River, the Joni
Herbie
Letters.
Hancock.
What did I say?
Herbie Mann, that's okay.
Oh, all right.
I wouldn't have corrected you, except I didn't want the listeners to get confused.
Herbie Mann has actually been here, but it was a while ago. I don't know where I was there.
No.
Off in the Bahamas mentally.
That's happened before.
Really?
Yeah.
Herbie Hancock? I don't know. All right, Herbie Hancock is my guest, and we'll hear a little bit of this piece from his new record, and then we'll hear a bit more in just a moment. But coming up later on the show, the cabaret-tinged singer Nellie Mackay talks about the trail that she's blazed outside the mainstream music industry. And in a moment, more with jazz icon Herbie Hancock. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Chameleon was a big hit in the 1970s for my guest Herbie Hancock, who is back now with a new record called River, the Joni Letters, which features mostly songs from Joni Mitchell, and pop stars like Tina Turner and Nora Jones helping out, of course, Herbie Hancock at the piano. And I guess congratulations are in order, not just the release of the new album, Herbie, but your beautiful early 1960s Shelby Cobra has just won an award, I understand. This is like your baby, your car, the car that you brought off the showroom floor some 40 years ago or something.
Yeah.
So you are a gadget guy, right? I mean, you like to have the shiny new toy.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, I have my iPhone. I got it the fourth day that it was out, you know. And but anyway, at that time, this was 1963 when I bought the Cobra. Watermelon Man, which is also on the Chameleon album, mm-hmm. by the way, since you were playing, on the Headhunters album, since you were playing Chameleon. The original recording was one that I made back in September of 1962, because mm-hmm. I wrote the tune in about, I don't know, March or April of 62, recorded it for my own first record.
Right.
And
then Mongo Santa Maria got hold of it.
And Mongo Santa Maria got a hold of it because I worked in Mongo's band for a weekend, and I happened to play the song for him, and anyway, he recorded it, and it became a huge hit in 63, because he recorded it like I think he recorded it at the beginning of 63. Mm-hmm. So by the time I was in Miles Davis's band, it was a big hit.
Yeah. You know? And so you had all this money, and you had to find something to do with it.
Well, with the first money, with the first check that I got, it was an advance check that I got from BMI, you know, which I belong to. I bought this car, AC Cobra, which I was told was beating the Ferraris in races, but it was also a street car as well as a racing car, and I paid $6,000 for it at that time.
Wow!
And
now
it's worth about $1 million.
Oh, my goodness. All right, because you, Herbie Hancock, need to be able to go fast. I mean, you do so many different things. You've done classical music in your lifetime and you know, kind of straight-ahead jazz, and you've always been, it seems, very comfortable in the world of pop music. So when it came time to bring in someone like Tina Turner, had you worked with her before? Was that a natural fit to you?
Actually, I had. Tina had been practicing the same Buddhism I practice for a number of years, and hopefully she still practices. I haven't seen her actually in a while, but there was an event once. Well, she used to live in L.A., and she used to practice in my district, so I used to see her about once a week.
And in a completely non-musical kind of setting.
Right, in a district meeting of Nietzsche and Buddhism, you know, we're now SGI, but anyway,
SGI.
Yeah, it means Soka Gakkai International.
Okay, so it's a
Buddhist organization, right. the lay organization of Buddhism, and once we had an event in Washington D.C., it was a big parade and some other events, and there was a performance, and Tina performed some of her signature hits. And I played piano, and Wayne Shorter played saxophone, because Wayne practices Buddhism too.
Yeah. All right, yeah. So it's all in the family, so to speak. Let's hear a little bit of you and Tina Turner and Wayne Shorter and the rest of the gang. Again, the album's called River, the Joni Letters, and this is Joni Mitchell's Edith and the Kingpin.
The big man arrives. Disco dancers greet him. Plain clothes cops greet him. Small town big man, fresh lipstick listening. Sophomore jive from victims of typewriters. The band sounds like typewriters. The big man, he's not listening. His eyes hold Edith, his left hand holds his right. What does that hand desire that he grips it so tight?
Joni Mitchell's song Edith and the Kingpin, here sung by Tina Turner with my guest Herbie Hancock on the piano. His new album is called River, The Joni Letters, hitting the stores today, the same day as Joni Mitchell's own new record, her first album of new songs in 9 years. Tomorrow, Luciana Sosa, who's also on Herbie's record, will be here. She's done some new Joni Mitchell stuff. So, Joni, very much in the air these days.
Yeah, right.
Being away for a while.
Yeah, her record is called Shine, Joni's record. Yeah.
Now, this really is a side of Tina Turner that we have not had a chance to hear much of before, but it works beautifully, and it's another example of, again, kind of how easily you move between musical worlds and kind of bring people along with you. When people attach the word crossover or fusion to these projects of yours, I mean, does that kind of get your hackles up?
I don't even think about it anymore, but when I first heard the word fusion, it kind of sounded... I wasn't comfortable with that word, you know. I mean, that was back in the Headhunters days. I wasn't really comfortable with that word. It is a... But then that became synonymous with that kind of fusion. That was called fusion jazz.
That specific kind of electric jazz rock thing that was
right,
happening.
Right, yeah. Exactly. You know, yeah, in a way, it applies. But I don't think of it that way. I just think of it as sort of a collaboration of genres. And in another sense, because jazz, the spirit of jazz in particular, extends itself beyond its own borders. It extends itself beyond its own borders. And it's sort of getting in touch with aspects of the spirit of jazz that already exist.
In other forms of music.
Right, right.
So Miles Davis, you mentioned playing with him a couple of times already today. I mean, he took a lot of stick from jazz purists for doing Cyndi Lauper songs and things like that in the 1980s. Mm. But isn't that what jazz musicians have always done, is take popular songs and recast them? And...
Hello. Duh.
So,
I mean, first of all, in the 30s, jazz was the popular music. Frank Sinatra was a jazz singer. He wasn't a pop singer. That word kind of didn't exist, pop singer, you know. Anything that wasn't classical, that was American popular music, was called jazz, you know. And that's what it stemmed from. Or blues. The blues, of course, was another thing. But the roots of jazz are in blues.
Mm-hmm.
See, so... I mean, these categories are, they're supposed to be tools that we use to help us, kind of guide us toward what, you know, what the language of the music may be.
Yeah, well,
but they get in the way.
Yeah,
you know?
And it's funny how the industry has changed now with downloads and stuff, where, you know, you download a song and off in the corner on the page it says, if you like this, you may also like that. That
right.
seems a lot, you know, that's not as genre-specific and seems like a lot more useful as a means of giving you some language to work with, you know, some currency.
It's great as long as the door is open for this kind of cross-pollinization or cross allowing us to make other connections
right.
in other genres. For example, in my record River, if they say, if you like River, you might like Shine, which is Joni's new record,
right.
or some other record that Joni did, or something else connected to what Joni did. That, for me, I love that.
Right, the 6 degrees of separation kind of thing.
Right, right,
you find
exactly.
yourself pretty far away from where you began.
Because you know, I've met a lot of people who are, like, clearly severe, hardcore jazz fans that told me the first jazz they ever heard was Rocket, or the first jazz they ever heard was a Chameleon from the Headhunters record, you know? But if you know, one of the problems I think with the technology and is that in some cases the suggestions keep you in the same category.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you don't have the opportunity to expand and to grow. That's a big problem when you're always encouraged to stay within a single framework. You know, and
that's never been a problem for you, has it?
No, no.
We've been speaking with Herbie Hancock, the pianist and composer. His new album is called River, The Joni Letters, and is full of great songs from Joni Mitchell, including the title track with Corinne Bailey-Ray doing the vocals. Herbie, great to have you on Soundcheck again. Thanks very much for being with us today.
My great pleasure, John. Thank you for inviting me.
Herbie Hancock, my guest, and join us on Soundcheck tomorrow when we ask, does political music still matter? Singer, songwriter, and activist Steve Earle will join us to talk about protest music. This is Soundcheck.
I could skate away on. I wish I had a river so long I could teach my me at ease. They love me so much.